Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the program. I'm going to be reading out today second part of a piece written by a group member from the Netherlands by the name of Corné Cortel. The first part was read out some programs ago now. It was published in the December 2022 issue of the magazine. And both articles are titled A Blueprint for the Future, Utopian Thinking. In the first part, Corné addressed the efficiency of justice, as he termed it, and also the interdependence of all things. And this part two, published in the January-February issue, explores the concept of an ideal civilization. In the book From the Mundane to the Magnificent by Vera Stanley Alder, it describes autobiographic events that took place in rural England during World War II, where she had regular meetings with an advanced human being called Raphael. And a question was asked about Raphael in a previous issue of the magazine, and Benjamin Krem at the time replied that this advanced being was a disciple of a master of wisdom working on the inner planes. Raphael showed Vera how to leave her body to see and explore the similar, if not identical, energetic structures of an atom, a human body, and a solar system, illustrating that everything is interconnected, alive, and has a consciousness on different levels. He also showed her a vision of what life could and will be like if people were to live as intimate and benevolent servants of nature instead of as ignorant exploiters. Vera Stanley Alder describes the landscape as seen from above. Beautiful scenery of the countryside that followed the natural contours of the land, with no hedged-in fields denoting property boundaries. There seemed to be no ploughed fields and no cattle. Animals could occasionally be seen wandering at large in large family groups, but there were no ugly towns, billboards, or railway junctions because the railway transport was all underground. The airship in which Alder and her companion travelled was propelled by a clean form of atomic energy, noiseless, fumeless, and very economic, as she said, drawn from the air itself and stored and released by means of the manipulation of vibrations and colour rays. Public highways were beautiful garden roads, bordered by grasses, cereals, salad plants, and herbs, which all people tended and planted with enthusiasm and delight. Rich stretches of fruit bushes and fruit trees were flanked by forests with a preponderance of nut trees. There was no large-scale cropping. The biochemistry of all plants and their action on the soil was carefully studied, and planting was always mixed so that one type of plant helped another. This prevented pests and soil deficiencies. In all this wealth of harvest, with bees, butterflies, and birds, everywhere people were observed to be happy, studying the soil together, planning the care of their joint land. Animals were no longer exploited for food or clothing and allowed to fulfill the economy of nature. As man himself was a beast of prey, this influenced the animals, and now man's duty was to eradicate the predatory instinct in the animal kingdom. A small community town consisted of buildings that were laid out in a large flower-like design, a large building in its centre, from which smaller ones radiated, housed all the community's social needs, its club and entertainment centre, health services, industrial unit, prayer sanctuary and school. It also provided many other services like heating and laundry work. There was no cooking as we know it, because the people lived largely on fruit, nuts, salads and sprouted cereals. Raphael explained that all people were craftsmen along some line, making beautiful things for each other. For this reason, shops were hardly necessary. People were self-governed, managed without money, and contributed to the government of their land and also to the world government. All surplus production in goods and food was exchanged for things they could not produce. There was hardly any need for local travelling because all was managed quite easily through television, as she termed it, keeping in mind this book was written before, or actually during, World War II, as was education or drinking tea together. Alder asks, but could such a wonderful way of living ever really come to pass? And Raphael exclaimed, of course it could and will. It would come about fairly soon if we could break the world money complex. We are all slaves to money at present, because we are first of all slaves to fear. Fear for ourselves and our own security. We forget, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all else shall be added on unto you. Seen from the air, London looked like a huge garden landscape, built upon flat roofs, with children playing and people tending their salad beds. No busy streets, no noisy traffic, but clean air and only occasionally big buildings. It seemed very much an outdoor life. But what about the well-known British climate? Because of all the tree planting, had the climate reverted to what nature had originally intended? Raphael replied, correct afforestation regulates the moisture, disperses the winds, and subdues both heat and cold. When this is carried out all over the world, under the supervision of the world government, the world climate is changed for the better. Soil erosion is conquered, so are droughts, deserts, famines, floods and hurricanes. It all seems simple and obvious enough to these people now that they have accomplished it. Along the banks of the River Thames, people were tending fruit trees and a group was dancing. On artificial sandy beaches, suntanned and strong children were playing, swimming or studying. And Alder's next question, Raphael, all this is very desirable and ideal, but what could possibly happen to change the world so much? And Raphael describes how evolution must go on, and although mankind, with its free will, has determined to learn its lessons the hard way, the almost intolerable suffering and degradation thus engendered will stir and bring all that has been repressed to the surface. Being shown our present state so clearly, a great worldwide reaction of revulsion and aspiration will take place and root out our terrible complacency. And he goes on to say, the power of this spiritual revolution will reorient the total attitude of humanity to such a pitch that the whole world atmosphere or aura will change. This change will enable the greatest event in world history to take place. And what could this possibly be? According to Raphael, it was extraordinary how people remain asleep to the most vital things in life. And he says, "This is supposed to be a Christian country," speaking of England. "Christ told us that he would come again. The Jews believe in the coming of the Messiah. In the East, they await the Maitreya. The ancient Egyptians had it all mapped out in their amazing astrology. They spoke of the ever-coming one who appeared in each great sign of the zodiac to give humanity its next lesson in evolution. Yet, with all our history and research," Raphael goes on, "we remain blind and asleep to the fact that this is indeed now the end of the age of which Christ spoke. Therefore, his second coming is closely upon us. The pulse of destiny is racing. The old and obsolete civilizations will all be broken apart. Humanity will be scattered in all directions. From the debris and the ashes, the phoenix of the new age will arise. A generation of new and unconditioned peoples will come to birth to build a new age." Vera Stanley Alder and Raphael then left the craft and entered a large and beautiful college hall with an enormous television screen at one end and people assembling in utter silence. In a blazing golden light emanating from the screen, a figure appeared who, slowly and with very few words, seemed to instill meaning and realization telepathically, as if a great invisible intercommunication was at work. It was a world event taking place regularly everywhere, and it was the highlight of people's lives. Regular meditation meetings would be held in all countries to amplify and study the new teaching. And Alder asks, "Of what will the teachings consist, Raphael?" And his reply, "They will give understanding of the human being's real function on this planet, of his techniques in helping with the evolution of all kingdoms in nature, with international relationships and the new world economics, and they will give understanding of modes of living that would lead to a kind of world organism rather than a world government and a global religion in which each faith will find its rightful place." Asking what she, Alder, could do to help, Raphael said to quietly make it known through writing, speaking, and teaching, but only to those who seek. It was early in the 1980s that the former Chancellor of Germany and the Nobel Peace Prize winner, Willy Brandt, formed an independent commission on behalf of the United Nations with eminent members and leading figures in economics and industry to study world poverty. It was an important step towards setting our house in order as a prerequisite asked of humanity by the masters before their return to the everyday world, and that was mentioned in part one of this article. The result was, and still is, probably the most comprehensive, practical analysis of critical global economic issues to date, and it was titled North-South, A Programme for Survival, and generally known as the Brandt Report. It presents the need for change and the blueprints for a global sharing economy, not only as a moral imperative, but also to prevent long-term instability and global impoverishment. Some recommendations from the Brandt Report are that issues facing the world would better be discussed by the leaders and representatives of every nation rather than by a small group of rich nations, which we call the G8. Next, a society of nations should be brought together with the issue of world peace and disarmament high on the agenda. And the next point, world leaders should organise the provision of basic necessities such as food, clean water, health and medical care for everyone. And the next point, the self-interest of the rich nations needs to be sacrificed in the short term if they are to ensure their own survival as well as that of the developing countries. A large-scale transfer of funds from the rich to the developing countries would have an anti-inflationary effect on the North, would help the world economy out of recession in the short term and contribute to greater growth in the long term. The Brandt Report was well publicised, read and discussed, but 40 years later, inequality and exploitation have only increased. According to Oxfam, thousands of new billionaires have emerged from the coronavirus crisis and the war in Ukraine. Recommendations from the report were never adopted by governments due to the Cold War and a collective lack of political will among world leaders, perhaps because there is insufficient public knowledge of the facts, as the report suggests. Exactly this point might be the crux of the matter, because no government can withstand the power of a well-informed public opinion. This ties into the questions posed in Part 1 that the public would need to have clarified in order to move forward. Are these future visions beneficial for all people, including the economically privileged? And are these visions of the future feasible? Such visions can only become real when we, the people, are well informed and, from our own free will, decide that we need justice in order to manage the world's crises and resources efficiently. Rethinking life's priorities with a saner and simpler lifestyle will contribute to worldwide prosperity, and life will become so much easier and more fulfilling for everyone, freed from insecurity, stress, and worry. Practicable blueprints for a fair and durable global economy already exist and are ready to be implemented. Such change doesn't mean that the rich countries have to live in poverty, since there are no shortages. Even with the current inefficiencies of capitalism, a 10% surplus of food per capita is being produced now. But it makes sense that the extreme wealth of the 1% that equals the combined wealth of half the world population needs to be addressed. Besides, the ever-growing inequality is simply not a sustainable option, leading, as it does, only to increasing social instability, international conflict, and ultimately self-destruction. And a comment going back to Raphael, from Raphael, the destiny of mankind is very glorious. Men are learning to become gods. We will have to go through all the trials inherent in wrong living, such as war, disease, ignorance, until our ultimate revolt arrives, and we realise that we must make a stand for integrity at all costs. We have come to the crucial point in our evolution when we realise that we need to stop accepting pain and sorrow as inevitable and courageously seek to turn away from the familiar path. Together, we must come to understand that neither communism or capitalism, but the middle way, justice and freedom, is the only efficient and sustainable way forward. Sharing the world's resources, not as a dogma, but as a heartfelt expression of that cohesive force called love. And to finish with a quote from Nelson Mandela, "It always seems impossible until it's done." So that article, again, was by a group member living in the Netherlands, Corné Cortel. And we'll probably have excerpts from both of those articles uploaded to the website if you'd like to check them out. The URL is share-international.org. And in fact, we have several copies, spare copies, of recent magazines. And if you would like a copy, I would be very happy to send you one free of charge. Simply send your details via our email address, sharenz@yahoo.com. Thank you very much for listening in today, and I'd like to wish you all a lovely week.